Hi, and welcome to Module 1, Database and Instance. In this module, we will talk about the concepts of database and instance and how the implementation of those two concepts differs between Oracle and SQL Server. We will define the database and instance and what it means, and we will talk about the various implementations and the big differences between Oracle's and SQL Server database and instance implementations. We will also talk about client interactions, what are the networking protocols used to connect to and interact with SQL Server and Oracle instances. And then finally, we will talk about key database and instance limitations and how they differ between Oracle and SQL Server. So let's try to define a database and instance. To put it simply, a database is a set of files that stores your data. Whether the instance is the actual instance of, is the process, the relational database management system, and the process that allows access to your data. It's the process that accepts connections from your clients, that manages all the hardware resources on the host system and provides security and efficiency for your query execution. So these are the two most important aspects of the database and instance. Now, the big difference between Oracle and SQL Server is that in Oracle, you typically have only one instance, only one database per instance. So you can have a host machine with multiple instances of Oracle 11G, but each instance will be responsible for managing exactly one database. That one database can have multiple schemas with many objects in it. Of course, you will have multiple instances per machine if the hardware resources allow that. With SQL Server, it's different. Because with SQL Server, you always have multiple databases per instance. It is by design and out of the box. You get the SQL Server instance, and it already has a set of system databases on it. And the database, your user database that you create, is just another database there. So you will always have multiple databases. Now, historically, in SQL Server 2000, there was no concept of schema that would be similar to the schema on Oracle. The part of the name that represents the schema was actually the owner of the object. That led to some problems because if you change the ownership of the object, the name of that object changed. So, for instance, rather than Bob.orders, it would become Alice.orders. So changing the security ownership of the object would change the actual name of the object. So that was not optimal. That change in SQL Server 2005. However, notice that already in SQL Server 2000, there was ability to have multiple instances of the database engine, of the relational database system on each host machine. As long as your host machine has enough hardware resources available, you can run multiple instances with multiple databases on each instance of the database system. Now, in SQL Server 2005 and in all subsequent versions, Microsoft introduced what they call user schema separation. They separated the user who owns the object from the actual schema, and they introduced schemas similar to those in Oracle and other database platforms. So in SQL Server 2012, you can have a host machine with multiple instances of a database engine and with multiple databases on each instance. Each database can have multiple, can and will have multiple schemas with many objects in it. That allows you to host multiple databases on a single instance and therefore share resources, as well as provide any cross-database access. However, also for practical purposes, such as security, if you have two separate instances of the database engine, they behave like two separate servers. They do run on the same operating system and they do use the same hardware resources, but they are still completely separate and have separate configurations and separate security models. Now, let me show you a demonstration of how the instance environment of SQL Server works and how you can see multiple instances and manage them independently. So what I have here is a machine that hosts multiple instances of SQL Server. That's my Windows 2008 R2 machine, and I have multiple instances of SQL Server 2012 installed on it. I will start by showing you a tool called SQL Server Configuration Manager. That tool can be used to manage multiple SQL Server services. And just to describe what I have installed here, I have multiple instances of the database engine. That's the SQL Server instance 01 and instance 02. These are two separate instances and two separate services that I can start and stop independently. I also have a SQL Server agent, which is the component responsible for running jobs and scheduling jobs and providing alerts. And there is a separate SQL Server agent for each instance. I have one instance of SQL Server Analysis Services, which is the multidimensional engine for data warehouses. And we're not going to be talking about this component during this class. I also have one instance of integration services and reporting services. We will not be talking about those components in this class much either. But these are components, these are other SQL Server components that are licensed together as a package. So it's your choice whether you will instance just the database engine or you also choose to install other business intelligence related components of SQL Server. I can start and stop my SQL Server services independently. So in this case, I am stopping instance 01, and I will be starting it back right after that. So I can restart an individual instance of database engine. The database engine is essentially the relational engine of SQL Server. Now, another interesting thing is that each of those instances actually has its own directory. It is installed in a separate folder. So if we look at what we have installed in the program files on the C drive, I actually have the directory structure here is very interesting. I do have Microsoft SQL Server 8.0.9.0.10.0.11.0, basically separate directories here. Each of them contains the shared components. So as you can imagine, the 8.0.9.0 and 10.0 are backwards compatibility components, and this 11.0 folder contains all the shared components and all the shared tools for my SQL Server 2012 installation. Then each of the instances is installed in its own separate directory. So I have a separate directory for MSAS11, which is Microsoft SQL Server Analysis Services. I have MSRS11, which is Microsoft SQL Server Reporting Services. And then I have MSSQL11 instance 01 and MSSQL11 instance 02. These are two separate instances of the database engine. In each of those folders, there is a separate set of binary files for each instance. This organization allows for easy and independent patching of each instance. Not only I can run different versions of SQL Server side by side on the same machine, I can also have them at different hotfix level or patch level. So I can, for instance, have SQL Server 2012 RTM installed side by side with another instance that has already been upgraded to SQL Server 2012 Service Pack 1. That way, it is easy and independent, independent patching. Also, each instance has its own set of database files. Let me show you. I actually installed each instance to a separate folder on another drive. So in this case, I have MS SQL 11 instance 01, and underneath, under this folder, I have a set of folders that holds all the database files for that instance. So in this case, this data folder contains log files and data files for my SQL Server system databases. And each instance has its own set of system databases that are installed to a separate directory. So again, those instances are completely independent, and they are they work separately. And you can start, patch, you configure them completely independently. They, each of them can host a different set of databases. Each of them has its own set of registry entries to configure it. Let me now connect to one of those instances using a tool called SQL Server Management Studio. SQL Server Management Studio is the most important tool you will use to manage your SQL Server installations. It's a combination of a management tool and a development tool. So in a sense, it is similar as having your enterprise manager combined with some sort of development tool such as Toad. So it's both management as well as querying and database development tool. So in this case, I would like to connect to one of the instances on my host machine. As you know, I have two instances of SQL Server database engine installed on my machine, and I can connect to each of them independently. I will connect to my instance 02 using Windows authentication. Oh, that's failed. Let me try SQL authentication in that case. That worked just fine. So now I am connected to one instance of Database Engine, one of the two instances that are running on my host machine. And as you can see, each of this instance has its own set of four system databases. There are no user databases installed on that instance yet. I can also connect to the other instance using the same password. This is the other instance, instance 01, that is running on the same host machine. As you can see, those two instances have the same build levels, so they are running the same version of SQL Server 2012. Instance 01 has two user databases already installed, AdventureWorks 2012 and AdventureWorks DW 2012. These are sample databases from Microsoft that we will use during the demos to provide to illustrate some of the functionality of SQL Server 2012. Now, there is a separate set of system databases available on that instance. So once again, each instance completely different, completely independent configuration, and an independent separate set of both system as well as user databases that are running there. I could also connect to an instance of another type of service. For instance, I could connect to analysis services or integration services or reporting services. But as I said before, we will not be covering those components of SQL Server in this class, because we are mostly interested in the database engine, the relational database management system for SQL Server. Let me go back to my slides. The client interaction between database and instance, so how your applications and how your users connect to your instance and database, is actually very similar between Oracle and SQL Server. As you can see from the slide, the general architecture is similar. It's the terminology or the names for the components that differ. And for instance, the role of a listener in Oracle is served by TDS endpoints with various network protocols that are available in SQL Server. The application level protocol used by SQL Server to connect to communicate between the client applications and the database engine is called TDS, or Tabular Data Stream. That's an application level protocol. So it also needs a network protocol in order to be transmitted over the network. You can use either TCP/IP, or you can use named pipes, which is a Windows networking based protocol. But you can also use shared memory, which is a local only protocol that allows your application to communicate with the instance of SQL Server running on the same machine. So essentially, the TDS packet containing your query is sent over to the server using TCP/IP. Once it arrives there, the TDS packet is extracted and passed on to the relational engine for execution. And there is also a storage engine that is responsible for managing your data storage. Let me show you in the demonstration how you configure network protocols for your SQL Server. We will use the same tool, Configuration Manager, SQL Server Configuration Manager, but now we will go to SQL Server Network Configuration. We have separate configuration for each of the instances. So there is a separate network protocol configuration for instance 01 and for instance 02. Let's configure network protocols for instance 01. As you can see, three protocols are available, two of which are already enabled. So, of course, the shared memory, which is the local-only protocol, has already been enabled. Named pipes, which is Windows-specific and has its use limited to any Windows machines that can connect to the server using SMB protocol, is disabled. And TCP/IP, which is really the preferred protocol for anything, for any network communication to SQL Server, has been enabled. Let's take a look at the properties of TCP/IP. So, as you can see, it's enabled. I have also enabled TCP/IP to be active on all my IP addresses that I have on this machine. So it's SQL Server is listening on all the various IP addresses, including IPv6 addresses that are available. And it's using TCP dynamic ports, which means the TCP port that is used by this particular instance is actually assigned dynamically when the instance starts. Because we never know which TCP port might be in use by another piece of software or by another service on this machine. Therefore, we grab any available TCP port upon startup. Because the port is dynamic, of course, you could also enable and configure a static port on which your instance would run. But in this case, we are just using the dynamic ports. Because we have dynamic ports, your client software will not be able to figure out and won't know where exactly to connect. Because of that, we have a special service called SQL Server Browser. And the role of SQL Server Browser is essentially to provide a name resolution service for SQL Server connection. when you have a piece of software that wants to connect to instance 01 on my host machine, that software does not know which port that particular instance is running on. So it uses the SQL Server browser as a kind of a RPC mapper, where it asks, oh, I'm looking for instance 01. Where is that instance running? And the SQL browser will tell your software where your particular instance of SQL Server is running, using which TCP port, and therefore where your connection should be established. If you disable SQL Server browser, which is possible and sometimes done for more secure installations of SQL Server, you will not be able to resolve those TCP port. In which case, we would need to configure the TCP protocol to use a particular TCP port, let's say TCP port 1234. Those changes are saved, will only take effect once my service is restarted. That way I can specify that the SQL Server should listen on a particular static TCP port. And then you would use that TCP port in your connection string in order to connect to that particular instance. But the default configuration, of course, for any named instances is to use TCP dynamic ports and use a SQL Server browser to resolve the names. Now, as I said, each instance has its own separate configuration, and each instance can use a different set of protocols to listen for client connections. In order for the client application to be able to connect to a particular instance and perform its activities, you must also have a client configuration where you specify protocols that you want to use. So in this case, my client-side configuration, basically the configuration for the SQL native client running on this machine, is to use all three protocols. All three protocols are enabled, and we are going to be using them in a particular order, so preferring shared memory as the first choice protocol. If the shared memory doesn't work, we fall back to using TCP/IP, and then finally named pipes. It is important to remember that in order for the application to be able to talk to your SQL Server instance, they must have at least one protocol in common. If they don't, they're not going to be able to communicate. And the order of the protocols that your application will choose depends on the configuration of the SQL Server native client. Another interesting part of the SQL Server native client network configuration are the aliases. You can configure a server alias. So you can create an alias specifying that when your application says server foo, it really wants to connect to server called bar using TCP/IP and maybe using that particular port number that we configured for that instance. So that allows you to redirect the application from one instance to another without having to change the connection string or change the source code of the application itself. Those client library aliases are somewhat similar and work very much like the DNS aliases that I'm sure you're familiar with. Okay, so in this demonstration, I've shown you how to configure various network connections for and network protocols for SQL Server. And I described the role of the SQL browser. Now, finally, let's talk about some of the database capacities between SQL Server and the differences of those between SQL Server and Oracle. I have to say that many of those limitations are so large that they don't really matter in practice, because there will be practical limitations and there will be practical problems that you will run into before you reach those limitations that are described on this slide. But briefly, let me go over this table and explain what are the differences. One of the main differences, and something that we will discuss in a later module, is the fact that SQL Server uses a fixed size data blocks. Those data blocks are called pages, and they always have 8 kilobytes. Unlike in Oracle, where your data block size is configurable and may vary between 2 kilobytes and 16 or 32 kilobytes, depending on your operating system platform. In SQL Server, it's always 8K, and the size of database extend is always 64K, because it's always 8 contiguous pages. And since the pages have fixed size, so do database extents. Now, the maximum file size in Oracle is 64 gigabytes. It's 16 terabytes in SQL Server, at least in theory. However, the practical limitations limitation will be based on the maximum volume size for your disk partition where you put your data file. SQL Server can have up to 32,767 files, which is half of that on Oracle. But because the files can be, at least in theory, much larger, the theoretical limitation for the maximum size of the database is over 500 petabytes. And I don't think it's practical, and I would not expect anyone to be creating such a large database on a single instance of SQL Server, nor Oracle. There is no notion of control file in SQL Server, so we don't have maximum control files, control file size limitation. The number of instances that you can host on a single host machine is fixed at 50 instances on SQL Server 2012, whether it's unlimited or limited just by the host resources on Oracle 11G. Also, the size of the log file is much larger in SQL Server 2012. The reason for that, as you will learn from the next module, is that the transaction log file in SQL Server serves dual role, and the entire logging model, transaction logging model in SQL Server, is somewhat different from that in Oracle. Now, the number of table spaces in Oracle 11G, the maximum number of table spaces, is the same as the number of files. And so it is in SQL Server 2012, where the maximum number of file groups is the same as the maximum number of files that can be hosted in a single database. We will talk about how table spaces map into file groups in the next module. Now, in this module, we have covered the notion and the definition of database and instance, and how the implementation of the instance varies between Oracle and SQL Server, and how both database platforms communicate with their client applications, and what are the protocols that are available in SQL Server. As you've seen from the maximum specifications or maximum size limitations that are present in Oracle and SQL Server, both database platforms can handle very large databases without any problems. So thank you very much for watching Module 1, and see you in Module 2.